We have the complainant on the phone. And sir, because this is being recorded by an outside camera crew, I'm just going to refer to you as the complainant. So if you hear that, that's going to be a reference to yourself as the complainant in this case. We'll quickly go around the room and introduce everybody here. My name is Vadim Mazursky. I am a CRC member, and I live in Southwest Portland.
I'm Julie Falk. I'm a CRC member. I live in Southwest Portland.
I'm Hillary Howe. I'm a CRC member. I live in North Portland.
Shehan Nami, CRC member, Southeast Portland.
Art Nakamura, commander of the Tactical Operations Division.
Cliff Bocciolupi, captain of Internal Affairs.
Dana McCauley, deputy director of IPR.
Brian Parman, commander of the Professional Standards Division.
Regina Hannon, Portland Cop Watch.
And I'm Dan Handelman, Fine Focus Video Collective, Portland Cop Watch.
And we have a couple of people on the phone as well on the CRC members side. Would you please introduce yourself as well?
Sure.
Yeah,
Kristen Malone.
Oh, I'm sorry. Didn't realize I wasn't the only one.
Okay. I think we got that. So we'll proceed straight to the case since we have the claimant, the complainant on the phone right now. And we'll do the initial review of the file. First of all, has everyone on the CRC reviewed the case file?
Yes.
Yeah, great.
And
I just want to remind everybody else that for purposes of this file review section of the hearing, we're not to deliberate on the substance of the allegations, but simply to ask questions about the investigation and the material to ensure completeness and readiness of the file for hearing. Would the IPR Deputy Director like to make a statement?
Sure. We received this appeal at the end of last year in 2019 regarding the appellant's arrest and being taken into custody in 2016. He filed a tort claim notice which alleges that he was injured while he was being taken into custody. And so Internal Affairs conducted an investigation to ascertain whether there was any evidence available to substantiate the notion that he was injured while he was being taken into custody. In my review of the case, I found that the investigator interviewed 16 sworn officers, one former officer, did an extensive review of records that were available with regard to this arrest, which included AMR reports, booking reports, and other documents that accompanied his custody through being taken into custody and booking. And then also made an attempt to interview the complainant, and that was denied by a complainant's attorney. So based on the information that was available, a recommended finding of unfounded was made for this investigation, and we agreed with that finding, and that's what the appellant is appealing.
Thank you very much. Would Internal Affairs like to make any comments about this file?
No, just real briefly build upon what Director McCauley said. There was a total of 17 interviews. 16 of those were current members. One was a former member. As part of the case preparation and ultimately the findings that were undertaken on this case, we reviewed AMR documents, Portland Fire Bureau pre-hospital care report, Multnomah County Sheriff's Jail intake booking screening questions document, the CAD printout for the call, police reports, after action reports, emails, and then ultimately the transcripts of all the various interviews that were taking place. Once the investigator finished with that case, it went to the sergeant and then through the lieutenant of internal affairs. And once there was a concurrence on the investigation, it was sent out to the RU manager for findings. That's Commander Nakamura, seated to my right. He performed what we call a findings to render findings on the allegation. And then ultimately those findings were reviewed by myself, the assistant chief, and assistant chief, I should say, and one of the directors at IPR. And so that is structurally what took place with this case.
Is there anybody from the CRC that believes that the case file is incomplete, or is there any questions about the case file?
Yes. This is Kristen on the phone.
Yes, go ahead, Kristen.
Great. Can everybody hear me?
Yes. Very well.
Very much.
Sorry. So was any effort made either before or after the initial set of findings to obtain the appellant's medical records?
I believe there is an argument. You're welcome to jump in here, but I believe yeah, Director Malone, I believe that what we have, everything that we have, was on the date of the incident in terms of the he was also checked by the CERT team has an embedded medic with the team. He was checked by that medic prior to being taken down to jail, and also again the pre-hospital care PFB pre-hospital care report, the AMR who documents pretty thoroughly what they find before they do a transport, and then Multnomah, or before they do or don't do a transport, and then the Multnomah County Jail intake booking screening. So I don't believe as part of the case file that we have any records post date of incident. Are you?
Yeah, the only, again, Art Nakamura, the only medical records we have were the initial on scene, which they documented no injuries. So based on the assessment of the on scene fire lieutenant, AMR, and also the corrections deputy, there's no need for medical attention at the time. So therefore—
Sure, I just asked because the appellate mentioned both in his tort claim notice and in his notice of appeal that there were medical records of from OHSU that substantiated his allegations. So that's why I was wondering if anybody made an effort to find those.
And I'm not sure about the timing of the tort claim versus the completion date of the investigation. That's something I would have to look at.
I thought the tort claim triggered the investigation.
And it might have.
That is correct. And what I can say is that the investigator communicated with his attorney at the very beginning of the investigation, and at the time, she was aware that we were proceeding with IA was proceeding with an investigation, and asked us not to speak with him. So I think that in honoring the attorney's instruction not to speak with him, that limited the ability to try to collect any additional records through the complainant, I'm sorry.
Okay, and I saw a reference to the attorney's request not to speak with the appellant until his trial was complete. I understand that this process has its own timeline and its own deadlines, but I'm wondering if that trial is now complete.
It is.
Okay. Those are my questions.
Okay. Any other comments about the case file?
Yeah, I found it. I found some things a little bit confusing, as I mentioned before the hearing started. There were, sometimes there were references to 17 officers being interviewed. Some places it was 16. They talked about there only being one reported use of force. And in our investigation overview, it refers to it as pepper spray, but throughout the case we hear about tear gas, so that seems to be a discrepancy. And also in the interviews, they also talk about sponge rounds in addition to tear gas. And they don't mention that again. They only mention the gas. So I was confused by those discrepancies. And also, I do feel like this is one where the difference between not sustained and unfounded is confusing to me in terms of the conclusion, because there was obviously efforts to try to determine what officer took the appellant into custody, and of the 17 people that were interviewed, no one remembered who took the appellant into custody. So I wasn't sure whether there was, an issue of the complaint itself not being valid, the allegation around force, or whether they just didn't have enough evidence for that because they couldn't talk to the person who was involved.
can answer all those questions.
Great.
So I had his whole big...
Can I...
Go ahead.
We're still in case file review, right?
Yeah.
Sorry, I know I'm not chairing this meeting.
Yeah. Let's hold off on about the specific questions about the incident until afterwards.
Well, that was about the completeness of the investigation.
Okay.
That's the manner in which I was asking the question. But we can take it.
And Commander, let me just phrase it in that particular way. Is there enough information in the file for you to be able to answer that question in full later?
Great. Yes.
Okay. Let me take public comment, and then I'm going to circle back to you, Ms. Malone, to see if you want to make any kind of motions about the medical records. But prior to that, would there be any public comment about the completeness of the case file?
Thanks.
Mr. Handelman.
Dan Handelman, Fort Cockpot. We, the public, do not get to see the case file, so we don't know the details of what you're talking about. I just reread the very, very short summary that we do get, and it does say that there were 16 current and former officers. It sounds like there was a total of 17, so that's a discrepancy even in the summary file. It would be helpful to have a little bit more details about what the incident was and all that, so we could get more of a sense of that there's something missing from the case file for the community, because it's very, very short, what we received.
Thank you, Mr. Handelman. Would there be any other public comments? Ms. Malone?
Sorry, I had a comment as well. This is Sylvan on the phone.
Yeah, please go ahead.
So I guess I actually had two things. Also sort of related to records about the medical situation. I know that we have the report from when appellant was checked on site before being transported. I didn't see anything like a report from when appellant was checked at the jail, although there was a reference to being checked by medical staff at the jail. It seemed like that might have been relevant since a lot was spoken of in the interviews done by the investigator about how the process of checking out people at the jail before they were housed. There was just a lot made about how he wouldn't have been accepted into the jail if anything had been found on the medical exam that was concerning. So I thought it could be relevant to have more information about that. The other thing I wanted to note, one of the interviews mentioned there was like a missing notebook from one of the officers, and I hadn't known exactly what that referred to. Elsewhere in the case file, I saw a reference to officers' duty notebooks and that those all had to be presented at the time of the interview. I'm not sure if we've ever been able to see those as part of the case file, but it seems like in a case like this one, where no one knows who took appellant into custody, possibly something like that might have been noted in a duty notebook, and I'm wondering if the lack of one of those notebooks could be important.
Let me take one of those at a time. Is there any record that you might know about from the jail with respect to medical evaluations when the complainant arrived?
The only thing we have from the jail is the intake interview where they asked about injuries, medical attention, and things like that. And on that list, just said diabetic and referred to the medical staff.
Okay. Do you know if there's usually any kind of a doctor or medical evaluation other than asking the individual as to what their medical condition is?
Per my personal history, if they ask for injuries, if they have any injuries, they'll refuse admittance until you get proper clearance. Or they see the on-scene nurse will come out and either deny admittance or accept admittance. From this one, it's just only injury or illness is diabetic and referred to medical.
Okay. And the other thing that might trigger that too is if the person being booked in custody has medications, number of medications they take, that might trigger a medical evaluation of some sort. Of that.
Okay. And then with respect to a notebook that might give any kind of insight onto who was involved, is there any knowledge about that?
So for CERT officers, they were called out from home, the emergency response, the SWAT officers. Those officers don't carry notebooks as does patrol officers because They get dressed right there on the scene, or they respond in shorts sometimes, as most knows. So they're not required to carry a notebook on scene. The sergeant, who's the supervisor, is in charge of writing the after-action report and documenting the events for the night. So they're not required to carry a notebook for the emergency activations.
Thank you. So at this point in time, I'll entertain any motions to either...
What about my questions?
Oh, yes, yeah.
About the questions I've raised about the discrepancy and the pepper spray versus tear gas and then the sponge traps.
Is it okay if we wait until we get into the substance of the motion, substance of the case, and then discuss that?
Well, to me, that makes me question the completeness of the file, that there's discrepancies in the overview versus, and so I'm not necessarily saying I would challenge the motion, but I wanted to
I can answer in two sentences.
That'd be great.
People are oftentimes, so patrol officers carry pepper spray, mm-hmm. so whenever patrol officers hear about gas or chemical agents, they think pepper spray. CERT officers have both. They have pepper spray and CS gas. CS gas is what's known as tear gas. So patrol officers don't know what we deploy. It's based on the on-scene supervisor. We deploy pepper spray or tear gas. So people might think it's pepper spray. But the report to follow for that is the CERT sergeant's after-action report that would document what actual agent was used, just because the other officers don't know. The sponge rounds. The sponge rounds were used to open up a hatch to get the gas chemical agents in there. So the sponge rounds weren't used on a person. They're used on a structure to get the chemical agent into the structure. And the third question about the officers, there were 17 total witnesses, one since retired. So there's 16 sworn, one retired. So a total of 17. There's 16 current sworn officers, one non-current officer. So total of 17, 16 sworn.
So it just seems like the investigation overview is sloppy because it says, and under the summary, it says interviewed 16 current and former. So that would make it sound like there was a total of 16 there. And then also in the review of records, that's where they referred to pepper spray. And I didn't see pepper spray, I don't think, in any of the officer testimony. So this what are we calling it, case summary for appeal hearing, that was put together by
me.
Yeah.
So that was my error.
Okay.
And I can say that when I was putting it together initially, I had gone through and done all the things, and I was like, this is way too confusing since you're going to read the file anyway.
Yeah.
And so I had said 16 current and one former.
Yeah.
And then I went back and did it, and I just forgot to put the one in. So that's my error,
yeah,
and
yeah.
I own that.
Okay. And then the pepper spray was just, you just went from gas, tear gas, to pepper spray.
Yeah, in my mind, I was using it interchangeably.
Okay.
But I don't use either one, so.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That answers my questions.
Thank you. Okay. I heard there was at least some question about any medical records that might be outstanding. Is there anybody that would like to move either to get those records or move to proceed to the next step here in the hearing?
Yeah, this is Kristen. This is, in my mind, a case that was driven awkwardly by several sets of deadlines. We had the appellant's deadline, presumably to file his tort claim notice, another deadline to file an appeal, and then the date of his trial, which did not work to his benefit in terms of communicating more openly with the police or providing medical records. Because this case seems so fundamentally entwined with his medical condition and whether or not it was caused during this incident that is pretty hazy in the memory of the officers interviewed, I think it would be reasonable and prudent to attempt both to interview the appellant now that conditions have changed and to pursue the medical records, at least from OHSU, with a note that the investigator claimed that because of some violent incidents while incarcerated, that there could be no causal line drawn if it does appear that this injury is real and potentially related to the kind of force that might be used in a handcuffing incident, that it should be considered whether the medical records from those prison incidents should be reviewed as well to see if they might be the cause. I understand that in some cases night of reports might be conclusive, but this is a case where the appellant was described by one officer as the highest person he'd ever seen. So I will give the appellant some leeway in fully appreciating and reporting his physical condition at the time. So with that said, I would move to attempt to have some further investigation focused on an interview of the appellant and review of all available medical records.
I second.
Ms. Malone, would you be okay if I spoke and asked the appellant what his view on the records were?
Sure.
All right. So this is a question directly to you. Once again, I'll call you complainant appellant, but the individual on the phone that filed this appeal. Basically, where we're at right now is we've had a couple people that would like to see if there would be additional records from OHSU, as well as having an individual converse with you to see what your medical condition was upon the arrest. That will take some additional time in order to get those records and speak with you, just to let you know. But we can make that request and then have another hearing down the road when those records come in. Would you have any preference one way or the other, whether to proceed with the hearing today based on the record as we have, which is we don't have any OHSU medical records, or would you prefer for us to get those records on your behalf and then postpone this hearing basically and have another hearing at a later point in time?
I think that those records are going to show, they're going to support what I'm saying, so I do think we need them.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second, so let's take a vote around the room.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Because the way the allegation is written around an unknown officer using excessive force, I'm wondering if, and I don't know if this is the perfect time to bring this up, but you can tell me otherwise. I'm wondering if we did find substantial evidence within those medical records that would show that there was causality and that there was use of force. The fact that we've got an unknown officer and we've been, and apparently according to the file, we're unable to identify such an officer, would we be able to actually proceed with an appeal? I mean, would we be able to actually, you know, rule any differently than what we
I think we would do our job, as in finding that there was some sort of misconduct by an individual and perhaps some reason to make policy recommendations. It's a good question as to whether anybody could be disciplined based upon not knowing who such an individual would be. But I think the appeal here is that there was an incident and that there was excessive force used. And if we just focus in on that area, I think we could make a ruling.
Okay.
And perhaps if there is such a ruling, then that would be
a good question. How long after this incident did he go to the doctor? Because the thing that I'm looking here is almost 2 years after the fact, and I don't know even with those records if that's going to conclusively prove anything for us, to be quite frank.
I think my motion is on the table. Sorry.
Okay. It is on the table, just so we know what we're going to be looking for, I guess. Sir, another question for you. After your arrest, how long did it take before you went to OHSU to speak with any kind of a doctor or medical assistance with respect to your injuries?
It was over 2 years.
Okay. And, okay. But you did tell him about the incident and any side effects of that incident, is that correct?
Yes, when I was admitted into the jail, I was put in a sling and taken to the medical unit and housed there for several days because of the injury.
Okay. So that's another issue 2 years down the road. It had to be, I suppose, a pretty serious incident to still show up at that point in time. Possible, though.
Can I amend my motion to include any records surrounding the admission to the jail and the placement in a sling? It seems like those are pretty important records that we don't have.
Okay. So amended, the jail records usually have a pretty thorough documentation about that sort of stuff, so we can amend it to both any OHSU records as well as the contemporaneous jail records.
I would second. Do we have to second?
No, we already have a second.
Okay, I didn't know. After amendment.
Okay, seconded that.
And then the other question for us, obviously, is yes. willing to be interviewed by an investigator.
Okay.
That's a whole subject.
And the complainant on the phone, would you be willing to speak with an investigator to discuss your injuries?
Yes, I would. And I also think that I might have some information that will help you with the medical files. The initial MRI shows the injuries. The x-ray with the orthopedic at OHSU showed that the injuries are so bad that they can no longer be operated on. So do you need the MRI, the initial MRI? That was taken about 2 years after my arrest.
Okay. And an investigator will be in contact with you down the road, and then if you could explain where those tests were made and approximately what time, if those were at OHSU for the x-rays, and then was the MRI at the jail or somewhere else?
It was somewhere else.
Somewhere else. So if you could explain to that to the investigator, we'll try to get a complete set of medical records in time for the next hearing.
Okay.
I think we still have to vote.
Pardon me?
We still have to vote, right?
Yeah, if we vote. Would you like to, Jahani?
Sure. So much of the motion is to...
To get additional records from OHSU, to get additional records from the jail, and then if the investigator comes up with any other information, then that might be pertinent to the records as well.
So I agree with the motion.
And to interview the appellant.
Exactly, and interview the appellant by the investigator.
So yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, and the CRC members online, I know you have motioned and seconded, but I don't know.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Okay, so the appellant on the phone, we'll go forward and try to get those records as expeditiously as possible and set up another time for a hearing. It'll be fairly similar to this process here. We'll, if you are still incarcerated, we'll give you a call. We'll have those records before us, and then those records will be discussed as well as part of the file. Thank you very much for being part of this telephone conference. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we disconnect?
If I do change address, what will I do about that? Will I contact you and let you know?
We should be able to find him within the correction system.
Okay. This is before IPR, which is within the auditor's office. If you are able to contact them, do let them know of your address change, but apparently they'll have the records of which facility you're incarcerated in and will be able to reach out to you. So we will do our best, or the city will do its best to find you, but if on your own volition you're able to contact the auditor's office and IPR, independent police review is the agency within the auditor's office that handles these complaints. They'll also update that information in the file.
Okay.
Thank you, sir. Feel free to hang up at this point, and we'll conduct some of the normal day-to-day business after you're offline. Thank you for your time. Okay.
Thanks, guys. I'm signing off. Well, this is Kristen.
Okay, Kristen, do we need your... can you hold on for just a minute while we... taken to, you weren't here for the last meeting, were you? I'm thinking about the minutes. We need a vote on the last minutes, I think, and we need you for a quorum. Oh, you were here? Okay.
I think we've got six on the phone, six total, right? And our quorum is five.
One, two, three, four,
yeah.
Five. Okay. All right.
Feel better.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Good luck.
Bye.
Okay. So let me begin at the top of the hour with the minutes from the last meeting. Are there any changes recommended to those meetings, to those minutes? No. Is there a motion to adopt those minutes?
I move we adopt the minutes from the December hearing. Second.
So I'll vote yes.
Abstain.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Okay. And we'll adopt those minutes. And then we have to take a vote on the current minutes as well, is that right? On the current agenda? I think, no? Okay. So shall we then move on to the director's report?
Yes.
Okay, so just to give you guys an update, we have finished selection for new members and have scheduled the training for February, mostly February. We'll start at the very end of this month, January and February. Irene has been trucking along doing outreach and has met with all of the people that you guys see in the report, so, and also participated in the drafting and adoption of the Slavic proclamation that happened this morning. Irene was a large motor behind that happening, so we're really pleased with the work there. Caseload for November to December, December to January, we had kind of a lull at the beginning of December, but we are back up to 18 intakes. 20, where our days are back up to around 20, which is typical. Again, in December it was down to 13, but we're back up to normal. Moving to the second page, that's all of our current independent investigations. And we are still running in compliance with all of our deadlines for DOJ compliance purposes. So please report that. And then the police bureau caseload you'll find on the bottom of page 2. And page 3 has the officer involved shootings status. The only change that you'll find on that page from last month is, of course, the incident that happened on December 8th. So that investigation is, of course, ongoing at this point.
Thank you very much. Yeah. There be any public comments? Why not? Today there's a pretty much public comments after the director report.
I'm happy to make quick public comments after the director report.
Okay.
I feel like, and maybe we've made this comment many times before, and I'm hoping for support from CRC, but this is Dan Hempelman, important cop watch for those of you on the phone. But the, you know, for instance, the IPR's current investigations are just case numbers. It doesn't say what made them turn into IPR independent investigations. It'd be nice to say, like, protest case or, you know, captain or above or whatever made it be an IPR case, because otherwise it's just a number. It's not clear what kind of cases the IPR is investigating. And then with the shooting deaths investigations, there should be a table showing the stages that the investigation goes through, so you can get a sense of how far along it is in that process. So sometimes saying training analysis, we don't know what that means, where what already has happened before that, we don't know. And then also, in addition to that, with the deadly force cases, since they're of high community interest, sometimes they'll say, you know, police review board scheduled, and then it falls off the director's report instead of, you know, a status that says police review board held, that will know that it happened. So that's really the general comments about the director's report. As soon as we have new staff, maybe it's the time that we can revisit and make it a little more thorough.
Can we take those into consideration in future reports?
Yes, I'm writing it. I'm going to ask you to repeat your second recommendation, but let me finish writing the first one where you said to add a table that indicates where the process cases are. And then what was your second recommendation? I'm sorry.
Just that after the police review board report is held, that should be one of those steps in that process.
And
that should also be reported. So it doesn't just fall off once the police review board happens. That they'll say police review board held. So that then when it falls off the next time, we know that's why.
That's why it's not on there, though.
Right, so one more time, it should say police review board held. So there's documentary evidence that police review board was held rather than we just forgot about this case.
We never just forget about it. And please forgive my long history about that. I don't mean to imply that I don't take this seriously. And so, again, just being you, please excuse my flippancy there.
If it never happens, then it never happens. So I agree that if it does happen, then that'd be a good thing.
Yeah. One thing that I can say is in the next year, I don't have a timeline on when this is going to happen, but we'll have an interactive dashboard on our webpage where you can go and see specific the information that you're asking for. So, for example, if you pull up, you know, case C-280, then you'll know that that's a shooting case or that that's a force case or a courtesy case or whatever the nature of that case is and where it is along the spectrum of the process. And so that's coming. It's going to be, again, it's going to be electronic and it will be available all the time to everyone. So I don't know that that's necessarily going to be reflected in this paper thing that y'all get, but that's information that we're trying to make available to the public in a way that they can interact with it in a way that's meaningful. So,
what happens now if you click on the on any link, anything?
I don't think that these numbers are on the webpage at all.
They're not at all.
So it'll be an entirely new interface.
All right, so let's move on to new and old business. Is there anybody that has updates on new and old business? Okay.
No, I did have a question. I wasn't at the last meeting, and someone mentioned the possibility of inviting the auditor to the retreat. Is there any information about when the retreat's going to be held? I didn't know if I missed anything about that. That's been discussed in more detail. Okay, thank you.
No, and have there been any conversations with the auditor since the last time we had a meeting about possible more participation?
We did make her aware of the concerns that were raised in the last meeting. She did send me the correspondence that she's sent with you and indicated that she's kind of spelled out her position on things in that email. That being said, I think that she's always willing to have new conversations, but she's not interested in revisiting conversations that you guys have already had. So that's the update that I have, if that makes sense.
Okay. When was the last retreat that we had? Was it in summertime last time? I don't remember.
It was in May. It was right before I was sworn in, so it was like May 28th.
Maybe when we have some of the newer people on, kind of more online, and go through some of their onboarding, we can have another retreat, so even before May, like maybe March or April or something like that. That'd be really nice. Okay, so new law business work group updates. I'll begin with the outreach work group. The mission statement of the outreach work group is to engage the community to raise awareness about the Citizen Review Committee, gather concerns about police services and accountability, and identify issues for the CRC to address. Following up with appellants and other community requests will supplement current work group tasks. Additionally, outreach committee members will serve as point for ongoing communications with IPR, the city, the bureau, community members, and or act as the face of the CRC. Right now, there is no chair of that work group, so we haven't had any movement in that. I will offer to chair it in the meantime. That being said, that offer is certainly contingent upon anybody else who wants to do it. So if there's anybody in the room or on the phone that would want to, just say now or forever hold your peace.
I support your chairmanship.
Okay, so hopefully before the next meeting, we'll have, before the next full CRC meeting, we'll just have a kind of a brainstorming session on this work group and maybe outline some of the people that we need to reach out to that we've reached out to in the past and go from there. Next is the recurring audit work group.
We still have Matt.
Okay.
So it would Daniel's comments from last meeting, I guess, still stand.
Okay. Crowd control work group. I don't think we have any updates from that. And Ms. Fraser, do you have any updates about the use of force work group?
No, I don't. It also looks like this group doesn't currently have a chair. I unfortunately don't have capacity right now to volunteer to chair it. Possibly when we onboard some new members, maybe things will be looking up.
Okay. So let's then move on to yet another round of public comments. Would anybody like to add just general comments that were not already said earlier?
A couple of things happened between last meeting and now, which was a brief reference to Mr. Henderson being shot and killed by the police. I think that was a pretty significant incident. The witnesses make it sound like there was 13 seconds, or maybe the dispatch records show there's 13 seconds between the time they were called on scene and the time that Mr. Henderson was dead by an AR-15 rifle. There have been OIR reports about the use of AR-15s. There's been 7 years of DOJ investigations about people in mental health crisis having too much force use on them, and this kind of thing happens. I don't know how many of you were around when James Chassis was killed in 2006, but at that point, Chief Sizer made a comment about, oh, well, we have to look at the mental health system and see how they're to blame. But in fact, it was not the mental health system that pulled the trigger and killed Mr. Henderson. It was a police officer. So we really hadn't advanced that much. And then the chief left office very shortly after that, which I'm related, of course, but we have a new chief. I don't know how many of you have ever met her. This leaves some questions about the sustained finding recommended at the last meeting. I don't know if the chief is going to make a decision. I don't know whether that went to the previous chief or it's going to that chief for review. I don't know where that case is in the pipeline or whether you're going to get update on whether or not she agreed with that finding. Usually that happens within the first 30 or 60 days or something like that. I think I handed all of you over at the table, and I'm still not really clear who's on the phone, but the new issue of the CopWatch newsletter, the People's Vision Report, we have some extra copies over here. I've been very glad that your meeting ended quickly, because there's a training advisory council meeting tonight. It starts at 6:30 out at the training division, and I can actually go back to the office before I go home. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. And for those interested, there's also a PSEP subcommittee meeting that is probably still going on with respect to facial identification. And Commissioner Hardesty will be there. I think some people from the public will be there, as well as Business Network. I don't remember their exact names. So. Providing input on any policies that might go forward as facial recognition becomes more of a reality. So that's on the east side. If anybody has any desire to go to that, it's about maybe a 5-minute drive from here. I'll let you know offline where that is. In the meantime, I think we're all done. No, any other comments? Yes?
Actually, I would like to comment. I'm just a resident. I come to these meetings. I like the way you ran this meeting, Mr. Mozersky. I can hear you. Part of it, of course, is that we're facing one another. I find these meetings to be really not conducive to public participation. When people are faced away from us, sometimes it's hard to hear. And tonight, this is the first time I've ever heard Kristen Malone's voice loud and clear. And many times when she's running the meetings, she's facing away from the public. And it's really kind of hard to follow her.
Okay. So and usually you sit on the side while...
Right. And I appreciate the way you ran this meeting.
Thank you. Thank you. It's all due to Kristen's tutelage. Okay, we'll take that in consideration. Maybe next meeting we can have more of the chairs up front, and I think we will be moving at some point in time back to the other building, so that might help as well.
I like this, though. It's more, I feel like I actually get to interact.
Yeah, and then feel free to sit closer as well. So.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very much, and the meeting's concluded.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Stressful.
Good job.